The following is a presentation of Remnant.
Hi, this is Jerry from Remnant. Let's be honest, this life can be hectic, draining, and downright confusing. My hope is that by listening to this message, your life can be impacted by God's great love for you, and His love will give you wisdom, courage, and strength. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jerry Godsey.
Look, I enjoy the game of Monopoly. I'm not crazy about the fact that it takes 4 days to play a game. It really does. It takes forever. And then every now and then you play that cheating one. You ever play the cheating version where you toss out the cards, you like deal them like a deck of cards? Well, that's just dumb. I love the game. I love the idea of the game. There's something about starting with just a few bucks and building up an empire. You know, investing your money in property, using it wisely, and building up an empire so that you can crush your family and friends. There's something good about a game that lets you do with that. If you can get Boardwalk and Park Place and start building hotels, you own the game. That's it. That's all you need is Boardwalk and Park Place and hotels. And then every time somebody comes around, they owe you tons of money. Now, there are some, there's some ghetto areas on Boardwalk. There really is. Let's look at a couple of the slides here. Baltic Avenue, rent $4. $4. If you put a hotel on it, it's $450. It's chump change. Who buys Baltic Avenue? John, I'm guessing you lose a Monopoly a lot. Okay. Meanwhile, back in reality. No. Okay, so let's look at the next one here. All right, now we're getting a little bitter. Vermont Avenue. This is not quite the ghetto, but closer. Now, I grew up in the ghetto. I can say these things. I really did. I grew up in South Central LA. Okay, so with a hotel, it's $550. It's a little bitter, but it's not great. Let's look at the next one, Randy. B&O Railroad. First of all, who's buying the B&O Railroad? You have to hold your nose when you land. No, I don't know. Anyway. Okay, and everybody says, oh, get the railroads. If you own all four of them, it's $200. Why bother? See, you got to think your way through these games. Let's look at the next one. All right, now we're talking Pennsylvania with a hotel, $1,400. To me, the green ones are really the key to the game. The green ones and the yellow ones. They're right there in that corner. And they're a lot of money. Get a little better. Now you're in a little better neighborhood. And then finally, the big king daddy of them all, Boardwalk, $2,000. $2,000. You land on Boardwalk and they got a hotel there, $2,000. You're calling the bank and asking for a loan. Now, when our family would play it, when our kids were at home, it got pretty competitive sometimes. In my family, there are three guys and just my poor wife. So quite often, she found herself by herself. Three guys in the house, all of them played sports. It was a little weird for her. So one day, my youngest son, Critter, was about 6 years old. My wife already knows where this is going. Critter was 6 years old, and I'm crushing him. And feeling good about it. Big deal, you beat a six-year-old. Yeah, I did. I beat a six-year-old. So Critter lands on one of our properties. It's got hotels on it. And he's broke. He's got nothing. And I told him, you're out. Give me all your money. Give me all your property. You're out. And my wife very gently hints, which is a nice way of saying she told me. No. Hey, you know, maybe I should give him a break. And I said, no way. The idea of the game is to crush him. I've crushed him. I'm dancing on his liver. He's done. And my wife uttered a phrase that is famous in Godsey history. To this day, Critter will be 30 in July. We all remember this phrase. She said, she looked at me and she said, with all seriousness, you just want to win. All three of the boys in the house, including Critter, who's getting his liver stomped on as we speak, looked at her and went, yeah. We're not playing this game to make friends. The name of the game of Monopoly is to invest your money wisely and build up an empire. Build up something that's strong, that can't be broken. I think you know where I'm headed with this. The idea of having a family is to build it right. The idea of having a family is to invest in it and build something that the world can't tear down. Now, I'm going to give you some things that we can do this morning to maybe help you invest wisely. I'd like to just sit down with Warren Buffett, the head of Berkshire Capital. I'd like to just sit down. Look, man, I'll take him to McDonald's. I'll buy him lunch. Yo, Warren, let me talk to you for a few. I'd like to see just how to amass that kind of wealth. I don't think Warren has time to talk to me, though. He's too busy doing news shows. If you follow the tips from today, though, I really believe you can invest in your family and make it relationally wealthy. Relationally wealthy. And that's something important. Here's tip number one. Understand each other. Understand each other. How many of you guys have an iPod? Right, this is the portion and answer portion of church. When I ask a question and you provide an answer. How many of you have an iPod or some type of musical player? And all the teenagers are like, I've never heard of an iPod. You're liars and your breath stink. All right. Now, I have an iPod. I have an iPhone. I have all kinds of ice stuff. I'm an Apple fanboy. Okay? Here's the thing. I don't know how it works. I mean, I kind of know. I know the programs, you know. But I can't say, all right, well, if you pull it apart, if you look at chip number 3, it will lead you to the transistor that will lead you to the defunctor, and that will take, yeah, I don't have any idea. You put the iPhone thing in the ear, in the muffler bearing. I don't know. Here's the thing. I don't have to understand the minutiae of how it works. I just have to know that it works. Now, guys, we're told in the Bible that we're supposed to understand our wives. And every man in the room went, what? Excuse me? I kind of look at understanding my wife like I understand Spanish. I know enough Spanish to get in trouble, but not enough to get out. I know all the cuss words, well, most of them. And I know, ¿dónde está el baño? Yo quiero dos tacos y dos tamales. ¿Dónde está mi hotel? I know those things. ¿Tú tienes una cara de perro? I understand that. I get that. All right, if you're sitting next to somebody who doesn't speak Spanish, explain that one to them. But see, there's a huge gap between hearing words and understanding them. When the people in my office speak Spanish, I hear the words and I catch a few of them, but I don't understand all of it. Look at 1 Peter 3:7. In the same way, you husbands must give honor to your wives. Treat your wife with understanding as you live together. She may be weaker than you are, but she's your equal partner in God's gift of new life. Treat her as you should, so your prayers will not be hindered. All the women said? All the men said? Ow. We hate you, Godsey. Treat your wife with understanding. We're directly instructed to treat our wives with understanding. Now, that doesn't mean that you totally get... Now, look, Lynette and I have been married 30... It'll be 35 years in September. We figured it out. I could be wrong still. I don't know. You, Tommy, you sit here. Would you make like make a note? And when I bring that up, just say, it's 35, it's 35. And I kind of know what makes her tick. I don't understand all of it. And I've given you this analogy before, and I use it every time, and I don't care. Lynette will tell me things and not want me to fix what's wrong. Well, I'm not wired that way. If you tell me about a problem, I'm going to tell you how to fix it. That's why you came to me. No, she just wants me to feel what she's feeling. She wants me to hear what she's saying. Now, as a man, if I call Victor over to my house and say, Victor, I've got a problem with the carburetor on my car, I don't want Victor just to feel my pain. I don't want Victor just to say, Jerry, you must feel horrible about that. I see, Jerry, that's, maybe we can watch a Lifetime movie about carburetors. No, get a screwdriver, help me fix the carburetor. By the way, none of our cars have carburetors anymore, are they? Carburetor is French for leave it the heck alone. Now, I know husbands who would rather listen to a lecture on quantum physics than trying to understand their wives. And let's be honest, women, there are a lot of you that don't understand your husbands either. I don't think it's too much of a stretch that in a marriage, we ought to try to understand each other. So, how do you do that? Well, this is one way. Make what is important to the other person as important to you as the other person is to you. Okay, now, my wife makes miniature furniture and dollhouses, and she even made little food out of this clay. She made a little hot dog that looked good enough to eat, except it was really, really tiny. I mean, it had little bits of green relish and stuff, too, and I went, that's great. I don't have the patience for that. I would be taken a hostage before I finished the hot dog. But so, I've encouraged her in that. I love the fact that she does stuff like that. I've taken her to miniature shows. This whole big rooms full of miniature things. I mean, it's amazing. But after my first go-around of the building, I'm kind of done. But I will still take her to miniature shows. We went to the miniature museum, which is kind of misleading because you would think it's like a really tiny building, and it's not. It was a really big building, just had a lot of miniature stuff inside it. Now, do I love miniatures? No. But I love her. And so what's important to her is important to me. Make what's important to the other person as important to you as the other person is. Understand them. So how do we develop an understanding spirit? By making the time to really get to know each other. There is no substitute in marriage for time. Get to know each other. Now, we're going to be gone next weekend. We're not going to be here. Because my wife and I are going to be off on our motorhome, camping. Which really, you shouldn't call it camping. I'm going to take in a house with me. And you know what? I'm okay with that. And somebody asked me once, well, what do you guys do? Nothing. It's great. We do nothing. We sit outside. We talk. We enjoy each other's company. Great. Wasn't always that way. Takes time. Really listen to each other. Just hearing the other person talk is not listening. Listening is interactive. Listening is actually saying things every now and then, more than, that's great, dear. Muting ESPN, not the same as turning it off and listening. That's great, honey. Oh, the Cowboys scored. Just not the same. Yogi Berra said you can hear an awful lot just by listening. I love Yogi. James 1:19, understand this, my dear brothers and sisters, you must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. As the old Irish proverb said, God gave you 2 ears and 1 mouth, you should listen twice as much as you talk. It's a pretty good rule of thumb. You've got to understand each other, and the only way it happens is by listening. Understanding one another. I love the Stephen Covey quote that said, seek first to understand, then be understood. By the way, if you haven't read the 7 Habits of Highly Successful People, highly effective people, I really recommend it. Not a Christian book, but written by a guy with good morals that knew what he was talking about. Seek first to understand, then be understood. Sometimes we're so busy trying to make the other person understand us, we totally glossed over understanding them. You can be understood later. Your job now is to understand your spouse, your kids, the people you come in contact with. Second thing, keep commitments. Somebody once said we should be generous with praise but cautious with promises. As a parent, you need to do everything you can to keep your commitments to your kids. If you say you're going to be at the Little League game today, you should be at the Little League game today. Spouses, we need to do everything we can to keep our promises to one another, including, by the way, our original vows. That's the greatest commitment you took. I like when these couples write their own vows. Now, I don't know if anybody here has written their own, so I'm fine with this. I promise to always bring you breakfast in bed. No, you won't. No, you won't. I promise to always make you my number one priority and never doubt you. Every now and then, I'm sitting back in high school. You're so stupid. What's wrong with you? Hey, the regular vows are hard enough to keep. Let's work on those. Children, teenagers, you need to do everything you can to keep your promises to your parents. All the parents said it? Amen. And the teenagers said, we hate you, Godsey. Not the first time I've heard that from teenagers. Remember, I was a youth pastor for 10 years. We just need to keep our commitments to each other. We need to be honest with each other. When a man promises to love a woman until death they do part, that gives a woman security to become everything she become in that relationship. Not, I promise to love you, with the old Meatloaf song, I promise to love you to the end of time. And a couple of bars later, he says, now I'm praying for the end of time so I can get away from you. Ecclesiastes 5:4-5 says, so when you make a promise to God, don't delay in following through. For God takes no pleasure in fools. Wow. You're like, what's the Bible? Shouldn't it be nice? Not here. Evidently not. Keep all the promises you make to him. It's better to say nothing than to promise something that you don't follow through on. I really wish somebody would send this Bible verse, just this Bible verse, to Trump and Hillary and to Bernie. That was really bad, wasn't it? If we're supposed to keep our commitment to God that tightly, how much then should we keep our commitments to each other? It kind of follows, doesn't it? We're to treat others the way God treats us. We're to have that kind of relationship we have with God, with other people. We've got to make promises and keep them. And once you lose trust in a relationship, it's almost impossible to gain back. It is so hard to gain back trust. The first time your kid lies to you, it is so hard to gain that trust back. The first time you catch your spouse in a lie, it's so hard to regain that level of intimacy that you need to have. Proverbs 3:3-4 says, never let loyalty and kindness get away from you. Wear them like a necklace. Write them down within your heart. Then you'll find favor with both God and people, and you'll gain a good reputation. Don't let loyalty and kindness get away from you. You should be, as a Christian, you should be known for your loyalty and your kindness. I've said it before that I really believe that every Christian ought to be the best employee their business has. Because that is the only lifestyle that is fitting for the Savior who died for you. If we're going to be God's emissaries on this planet, we need to do it the right way. And that includes loyalty and kindness. I put it this way, when we keep our commitments, it builds trust. And there's no such thing as a healthy relationship apart from trust. Trust is the firm foundation upon which family is built. But keeping commitments can be costly. It hurts to keep commitments sometimes. There are times when keeping commitments means that you're going to think of yourself last and others first. There are times when keeping a commitment means that you're going to give up doing something you really want to do because somebody else needs you or really wants you. Got any commitments that need to be kept? Husbands and wives, when's the last time you looked at the vows you took? Especially if you wrote your own. I promised to always bring you breakfast in bed. Yeah, really? When's the last time that happened, Sparky? And by the way, going to Jack in the Box and bringing home does not count. Not the same. That's the one I would write. Lynette, I love you. I promise to occasionally buy you breakfast and bring it home. See, I throw those buzzwords in there. When I write reports at the sheriff's office, I don't say that I saw a bruise that was exactly 1.4 inches. They always say approximately. I saw a bruise that was approximately 1.4 inches in diameter. I saw what appeared to be a red stain resembling blood coming out of the top of his skull where he was hit with a hammer. I had to do that for lawyers. No offense. I'm going to move on now so I don't get in further trouble. Number 3, give some respect. I was going to include Aretha Franklin. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. But I couldn't find a good one. And I'm not going to sing it to you because you've suffered enough today. Respect is not just something that Aretha wanted. It's something that everybody wants. In fact, it's next to impossible to have a deep relationship with another person when there's no respect. How am I going to have a deep relationship with you if I don't respect who you are? It's tough. You got somebody in your life you don't respect? A boss? Family member? Spouse? Maybe your lack of respect is the reason some of us aren't experiencing the kind of relationship God wants to have with us. Because we don't have respect for Him. Let's just stop there. Well, but Jerry, I respect the Lord. Do you? You really respect Him? Because if you really respect Him, you're going to live for Him. If you really respect Him, you're going to follow His commands. If you really respect Him, there's going to be some fear there. I've heard people pray like they're talking to their homies. Now look, I think we ought to have a relationship with God, Father, Son, related. But when you pray to, hey, yo, God, what's up, brother? I'm really not sure that's the amount of reverence we should have for the Creator of the universe, the Savior of our souls. I think there may be a little more there. You don't have to bring out the King James necessarily. Again, my most omnipotent Father, yea, that thou wouldst listen to thine child. Now you're just putting on airs. Proverbs 14:26 says, those who fear the Lord are secure. He will be a place of refuge for their children. Are you really teaching your children, parents, that you have a fear for the Lord, that you have a reverence for the Lord? Are they watching you model what it means to have a fear and a reverence for the Lord? Another word for respect is honor. Romans 12:10 says, love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. Okay, my brother-in-law, who is no longer married to my sister-in-law, by the way, so I guess I should call him my ex-brother-in-law, used to call his wife wench. And, you know, sometimes it was playing around. Now, in all of our times together, I have never called Lynette wench because we have guns and knives in our home, and she knows how to use them. She has at least a passing idea of where the bullet comes out of in the gun, and I don't really want to test her marksmanship. But even if that wasn't the case, I would never treat her that way. That's the woman I promised to love, honor, and respect. And there's no respect when I'm ordering her around like a scullery maid. It's just not. I hear husbands and wives talk to each other in such vulgar tones, and they're just hideous the way they treat each other. They get mad and they call each other filthy names, and wait a second, there's no respect there. And if, and by the way, if you're in a couple right now and you are verbally abusive to people, you need to check yourself, because that is not respect or honor. And you made a promise to do better than that, and you need to stick to it. Is that plain enough for you? I wrote it this way: as Christ followers, we are to take delight in honoring each other. We are to delight in honoring the other person. It's not supposed to be a hassle or something to dread. When we delight in honoring another person, it boosts their feeling of value. You ever have somebody tell you they respect you? Didn't you kind of just walk a little higher that day? Don't you stand a little straighter? Imagine if we did that in our homes. Imagine if we did that with each other. So how do you honor people? Three ways. Number one, by respecting each other's property. I told Lynette to quit trying to wear my shirts. I had to quit wearing hers. I kept tearing them. Respect each other's property. As kids, you ever do that? You take your brother's toys? My brothers and I made a line down the middle of the room once with tape. So you keep your stuff over there. And if anything crossed the line, it was gone forever. You'd never see it again. Until the other brother happened to accidentally drop it and it fell over the line. Ha! It's back. It's mine. My precious. By respecting each other's privacy. Now, teenagers, I want y'all to listen to me. Yeah, even you guys in the back. Teenagers, listen to me. I'll call you by name if I have to. Lauren. I want you guys to listen to me. I told you, I warned you three times. Your parents have every right to look at your stuff. In fact, parents, you have a responsibility to look at their stuff. Because let's be honest, teenagers are not the sharpest tools in the shed. They're just not teen. I love you guys, I do, but you're not always very smart. And I can tell because I've seen some of your Facebook pictures, and the hairstyles and the clothes you wear. I get it. That's all right. You can go back and look at mine. I was a teenager once. Senior high school, polyester blue leisure suit. Platform shoes. You had to wear the gauze shirt with the embroidered cuffs, pick the cuffs backward. Collar popped out over your hair parted in the middle. Yes, I had hair. I thought I was the coolest thing to hit the planet. Glenn Rice said it best. He said, if we'd have caught fire in those suits, they never could have put us out because there was so much nylon, we all would have died. I get it. Parents, look, I think you ought to respect your kids' privacy to a degree. But there comes a time when, especially when you see them acting up or doing things they shouldn't do, you need to step in. By respecting each other's time. I grew up teaching my kids that late is rude. And it is. You have people waiting for you, you're being rude. You're saying that your time is more important than theirs. I like the idea of Lombardi time. Vince Lombardi was the coach of the Packers. If you weren't 5 minutes early for a meeting, you were late. Philippians 2:3 says, don't be selfish, don't try to impress others, be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. Number four, offer encouragement. The easiest way to grow a healthy relationship is to offer encouragement. Susan Alexander Yates said this, I love it. We live by encouragement, we die without it, slowly, sadly, and angrily. Isn't that a great quote? We live by encouragement, and we die without it, slowly, sadly, and angrily. 1 Thessalonians 5:11 says, so encourage each other and build each other up just as you're already doing. As Christians, we're to be building each other up. As Christians especially, we should be the ones at work who are upbeat. We should be the ones who are offering encouragement to somebody. When's the last time you told a coworker they were doing a good job?
The last time they did a good job, which was never.
And you know what? Look, I got staff that work under me. I got three people that work underneath me. And I'm not the cheerleader of the unit. I'm the supervisor. But there are times when being the supervisor means being the cheerleader. There are times when you encourage somebody by telling them they did a good job on something they were supposed to do, whether you told them to or not. They just did a good job. You need to tell them, hey, that's a good job. Thank you. Appreciate that. And as you do that, they grow. How do you encourage one another in our homes? Well, first of all, by smiling. When's the last time you smiled at your house?
I'm home. I hate everybody. I hate everything. Leave me alone. I'm going to eat dinner, watch television. Hope you all die.
In the book of Job, everybody knows Job. Job, had everything happen to him all at once. You talk about a bad couple of, bad stretch of time. Job had it. But before it, in Job 29, Job says, he's talking about other people before he had all of his troubles. He said, when they were discouraged, I smiled at them. My look of approval was precious to them. Now, Jeremiah said, I think what Jeremiah said on Mother's Day, that women do a lot of things that men don't, that don't get recognized. Whereas men seem to get recognized for the things they do. But really, the only reason for that is because we will tell everybody what we've done. Empty the trash, says, I'll commit, back in. Yeah, I took the trash out. It was hot out there, but I did it anyway. Taught that trash, he was boss. Some of you guys are going to try that this week, and your wife's going to say, you're just as stupid as Jerry is. It doesn't work in my house. It won't work at yours. But you know what? When's the last time you told your wife, just without ulterior motives, if you get my drift, or anything else,
trying to keep you PG here.
When's the last time you told your wife, thanks for what you do, baby? Or being specific about it, say, you know what, that was a great dinner, babe. We went to McDonald's. Yeah, but it took a lot of work for you to go get it. You might want to pick your times there, you know? And sometimes it comes across as sarcastic, doesn't it? Because we use it that way.
That was a great dinner, babe. Made me a sandwich. Hope you didn't hurt your wrist cutting the bread in half. Yeah, you might want to save that one, Sparky.
Never underestimate the power of a smile. We encourage people by our words. I like this quote I found this week, Brian Harbour. He said, man doesn't live by...
Wow.
Evidently, Brian Harbour really has some power. Brian Harbour said, man doesn't live by bread alone. He also needs buttering up. And maybe strawberry jelly. Words are powerful. They can do enormous good things. Words are also very, very destructive. We encourage by pointing out the positive. A reporter once asked Dale Carnegie. Dale Carnegie had 43 millionaires who worked for him. 43 millionaires who worked for Dale Carnegie. It's not bad. Of course, he had more money than they did. And the reporter asked, and Carnegie pointed out that those men were not millionaires when he hired them. They became millionaires while they worked for him. So the reporter asked him, how did you develop these men to become so valuable to you that you paid them so much money? And here's his answer. People are developed the same way gold is mined. When gold is mined, several tons of dirt must be moved to get an ounce of gold. But you didn't go into the mine looking for dirt. You go in looking for gold. When is the last time you went into your spouse, your children, your coworkers looking for gold? And then when you got the gold, you let them know about it. We are so busy concentrating on dirt sometimes, we forget there's gold in there. I know people who are so busy picking out the faults of their spouses and their kids that they don't realize that not only are they destroying their family, they're missing out on all the good stuff. And by giving gifts, I like this one. I like getting gifts. Are there any Barnabases in your house? No, I've got a Bob. I've got a Billy. No Barnabas. Now listen, look at Acts 4:36-37. For instance, there was Joseph, the one the apostles named Barnabas, which means son of encouragement. He was from the tribe of Levi and came from the island of Cyprus. He sold a field he owned and brought the money to the apostles. Now, here's the important part of this whole thing. They called him the son of encouragement. That was his nickname. His real name was Joseph. I don't even know what Joseph means. But Barnabas means the son of encouragement. He was such a positive person. He encouraged so many people. They called him, you know, the encourager. That would not be a good, necessarily be a good superhero name. You know, like the Punisher, Batman, the Flash. Ta-da-da! I'm the encourager. That's a really nice shirt, Sparky. Maybe it's a superhero. I don't know. Save the best tip for last. It's also the hardest tip. Ask for and offer forgiveness. A lot of you just went, man, I should have gone home a while ago. Anyone who lives in a family of any kind knows that people will disappoint and hurt you. Husbands and wives, your husband, your wife will disappoint you and hurt you. And I know the newlyweds. You know, well, no, he would never.
Yeah, no. Gonna happen. Benjamin Franklin said this, I love it. Keep your eyes wide open before marriage and half shut afterwards. Benjamin Franklin, really a wise dude. Not wise enough not to electrocute himself, you know, flying a kite with the key attached to it, but he's, you know, a pretty smart guy. Colossians 3:13 says, bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have against one another. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. Now, if you think this is natural, if you think this is easy, you are out of your mind. Forgiveness is the hardest thing you'll ever do because it means that you're basically saying, I know what you did to me. I'm moving on. Not from the person, from the hurt. Now, and you may think, oh, but Jerry, they hurt me too bad. I'm going to hold on to this for a while. Okay. Who's paying the price for that? You are. They're not. You know, they hurt you. They give you the little schoolyard, sorry. Sorry. Come on. Sorry, I'll never do it again. Mary Poppins called those pie crust promises. Easily made, easily broken. Bear with each other and forgive most of the grievances you may have against one another. Forgive their grievances unless like it was a really, really bad one. And then you make them pay for it for the rest of their lives. No. Whatever grievances you may have. And you say, but Jerry, you don't know what they did. No, I don't. You know what else? I don't care. Because that verse says, whatever grievances. Man, that's a loaded weapon right there. And this is one of those verses where we'd like to say, well, you know, what he really is saying here. By the way, whenever you hear somebody read a verse from the Bible and they say, what they're really saying, your spider sense ought to start tingling. Because they're about to butcher it. Well, we know that, you don't know. Whenever they tell you it means something and then it means something totally different, no, that's not usually what it means. Bear with each other and forgive whatever grievances you may have. Forgive as the Lord forgave you. See, the second half of this verse is just as brutal as the first half. This is one of those verses we would like to take a black magic marker and use a highlighter as. That was a horribly constructed sentence right then. Did you? I'm surprised Olivia didn't jump up and grab me by the throat. You wanted to admit it. You wrote it down, I see. Forgiveness is not natural. It's more natural to carry a grudge. But we're told to forgive as the Lord forgave you. How did the Lord forgive us? He bore all the costs. He took all the pain. And he did it whether we asked him to or not. Sometimes, you know, we want them to share in our pain. Well, I'm going to make you suffer for a while and then I'll think about forgiving you. That's not forgiveness. We want them to earn forgiveness. We want them to say, you know, if you'll just say, you'll promise me you'll never do it again, I'll forgive you. That's not forgiveness. Forgiveness is from the heart, from the very, very base of your soul, and it says, I have no guarantee you're never going to do this to me again. I have no guarantee that you're not going to hurt me again. I have no way of knowing how my heart is fully affected by this. But here's one thing I do know. I forgive you. And that doesn't mean that you forgive them and then walk around waiting for them to do it again. Oh, this is just like that time before when so-and-so said this to me and I saw...
Forgive as the Lord forgave you. How often has God reminded you of your sin? The next time will be the first time. You can guarantee one thing. If somebody brings back your sin that you've gotten forgiven, it ain't God, it's the devil. The devil loves to parade our sins past us. Jerry, how can you be a preacher? Look what you've done. You know what? Man, that's covered in the blood. Jesus died for that. He forgave me. It's gone. It's gone. Never to be brought back. We don't forgive like that, do we? But we're supposed to. Forgive one another as the Lord forgave you. Man, that is a tall order, isn't it? You see anywhere here where it's an option? You see anywhere in here where there's wiggle room or there's any way to kind of snake out of this? The number one way we ruin our marriages is by a lack of forgiveness. And you can call it whatever you want to. The bottom line is we are too selfish to let go. See, I get really, really harsh about this because it's the one thing we won't try. We'll do everything we can not to forgive. And it's the only thing that brings freedom. Spanish have a story about a father and son who became estranged. The son left home, and the father set out to find him. He searched for months with no success. Finally, in desperation, he turned to the newspaper for help, and he placed an ad. And here's what the ad said. Dear Paco, meet me in front of this newspaper office at noon on Saturday. All is forgiven. I love you, your father. On Saturday, an amazing thing happened. 800 young men named Paco showed up looking for forgiveness. Families today are filled with people who desperately long for reconciliation. And in reality, all we need to do is place that ad. In reality, all we need to do to save our homes, our children, our families, is tell them, all is forgiven. I love you. That's hard. Let's be honest. This is brutal. It's also not an option. And look, there are some of you that need to experience that kind of love from God this morning. You're here and you're so busy beating yourself up about where you've been and what you've done that you don't stop to realize that God is looking at you saying today, saying, come home. All is forgiven. I love you. During our past series, I preached a message on the prodigal son. And I love the fact that the prodigal son basically tells his dad he's tired of waiting for him to die, and he bails. And as he's coming back home, he's practicing this speech about what he's going to tell his dad. You know, hey, Dad, I'm sorry I was a jerk, blah, blah, blah. But I love the verse where it says, while he was still far off, his father saw him and ran to meet him. If you're running from God this morning, if you're hurting this morning because you and God aren't on the same page, I want you to know God has been waiting for you to come to him. All is forgiven. He loves you, but you've got to get down the road. Now, if that's you this morning, this is your chance. Because here's the thing. If you've never experienced that kind of unconditional love and forgiveness, it's going to be really hard for you to give it away. I can't give you $1 million. I don't have $1 million. But what I have, I can give. And if you haven't experienced God's love and forgiveness this morning, it's going to be hard for you to give it away. So the first place you need to start this morning, if you're having issues in your home, and I want you to listen very carefully to me. If you're having issues in your home right now, The first thing you need to do is get your life right with God. No ands, ifs, or buts about it. Because until you're right, you can't make your home right. I got news for you. I don't care how long you've been married. There are married couples that never learned this. And they wonder why they're always at odds. They wonder why they're distant. They wonder why they constantly bicker. It's because they both need God's love and forgiveness. Your first step to a great home is on your knees. Then God works it out. I didn't put it in my notes, but what did Jesus say? Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Then all these things will be added to you. We got it so messed up. We want to find all these things first and then come find God. It doesn't work that way. Find God. Then everything gets worked out. Five tips for relationships. You got homework this week. Get it? Homework. I didn't mean that when I said it, but I thought about it and just wanted to look smart. Hey, folks. This is too important not to do. Our lives, our children, the people around us, there are lives at stake here. But it starts with us. If you got a problem with your spouse, you've got a problem. And you need to fix it. You need to get together with God. And you need to see them the way God sees them. Wow. Then you need to pray for them. It's really hard to be angry for somebody you're praying about. If you're asking God to give them a baptism of love, it's really hard for you to be angry at them. This is good stuff. But man, it's going to cost us some hide, isn't it? That's all right. If you're like me, you got plenty of hide to give. Let's pray. God, thanks.
You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us online at remnantchurchiv.com.